This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to a long-awaited, and I think we say that often, but that's our style here, episode of Lady and the Beard. I am half of your hosts here, Miranda, my voice is not new, and I am joined by one of my fantastic friends, Kelly. Kelly, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I mean, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, I I'm the same. Yep.
I think it's one of those things for most people in our stretch of age. It's like life doesn't suck, but some days it's not great.
Yeah, I.
I mean.
Yeah, I feel that. There's a sense of like, today hasn't been too bad.
Yeah.
And you know, you kind of just roll with that. And then, you know, but inevitably there's like you kind of like, oh God, today,
yeah.
I can't today. I'm done, you know, I'm not participating in today's life lesson. I'm going to do something else.
I've had several of those shenanigans lately. I would just say like, dealing with visa paperwork as an expat trying to live in a foreign country is not for the faint of heart. And I've had many days where I'm like, I'm just done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Because there's so much, I guess because the way the United States is right now and the way, I'm just going to say political. I'm not going to get on some soapbox and start. Because anybody listening, all I have to do is just say that, you know, our political climate. There is so much information out now about living abroad, moving out. You know, these countries are the easiest to get a visa to. These countries accept, blah, blah, blah. And I've seen it on TikTok, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And it's and like.
It is. There is truth to a lot of those that you see.
Yeah.
And there are some countries that are legitimately like paying people to come live there because like it's called the brain drain.
Yeah.
I think I was telling you about this before. It's like countries like the one that I'm in or Slovakia where I lived before. You know, these kids are like really smart and they're going to school to be like doctors or in IT or or whatever. And they're like, well, but I would be better off moving to, and some of them, a lot of them come to America or go to, like for here, they become doctors and they go to Germany or another very large, much larger European city. And it basically is, they're calling it the brain drain because it's like the best and the brightest are deciding, I don't want to stay here anymore.
Yeah. It's when I'll just say this, and this will be my one little, you know, pot shot at this, you know, the United States where I live is, you know, immigration. That's the biggest hot topic that both sides love to play with. You know, I have to wonder, you know, these people. I know that they're escaping or they're coming here because they want a better life. And,
right.
You know, I understand that. And I sympathize with that. But, I have to wonder sometimes, do they really know what they're getting themselves into by coming here? I mean,
I think it's a mixture.
I know that there's some like idyllic view that they must have. But if they had time to really do their research, this is not. That, you know, it's like I said, this is not a great place. It never has been really a great place. It's come to a point where, you know, everybody and even the younger generations, which I'm so happy, are really exploring the history of our country and knowing that
they're paying attention. You
know, they're paying attention and seeing that, yeah, we weren't great. Did we have great things that happened in our country from time mm-hmm. to time? Yeah, there were some good things that happened, but it was never like this great place. It was great for white people.
Yes.
But anybody else?
I was about to say, I think it was great for a certain, I'm with you. Like, I think it was great for certain people.
Yeah. Like, you know, like me as a white male, I mean, we prospered, but not at the at the expense of the indigenous people that lived here before us.
Oh, absolutely.
All the people that we enslaved and brought over here. And it's just, but they don't have time to know the history of this place. They're just trying to get out from whatever hellhole they're in. And like I said before, I understand that.
And some of them's history, I won't lie, is barbaric.
I
get it. You're like, oh, well, this is the lesser of the two evils, and I don't want to be in that anymore. So I guess I'm going to go to this. So
that's exactly the point. Is like, if you could find some place that, you know, was better than your, you know, current situation, we probably are better in some degrees.
I believe so, but, in some degrees.
But, you know, sometimes I'm just laughing like, God, if they only knew what a hellscape this place is sometimes. Yeah. But, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the good thing about some of the horrible things, though, actually goes into our topic, which is strong female. And in this sense, we're talking about characters or all of them are characters. They're played by some also strong, phenomenal women. But I think in that horrid, desolate ugh that we all have to some degree across the world, it takes some strong people to like bring us out of the dark. And so today we wanted to honor, yes, they're fictional, but I think even fictional characters have their place in bringing history out of the dark, because it's a comfort, right? It's like finding courage where maybe you didn't have it before. So
yeah,
I mean, we didn't mean to be like, this country kind of sucks, but it actually goes right hand in hand with our topic today. You've been wanting to do this one actually for quite some time. Like, if you're new here, Kelly and I have actually been podcasting off and on for several years, but we do this thing where we take breaks because, listen, first and foremost, Kelly and I are best friends, but mental health, job, family, all of those things come first for us. So we talk pretty much weekly, but we may not podcast consistently every month, but we're glad you're still here.
Yes. If you've, you know, been a listener, thank you for continuing to listen and being with us through our kind of erratic schedule. We've talked about kind of trying to be a little bit more, have like a on some sort of schedule that is not so chaotic. So we're working on that. So hopefully we'll get in a routine, and that's really what we're trying to do.
We're trying. My ADHD be bad sometimes. Like, I won't lie.
Life sometimes steps in and says, your routine is yeah, we're not having a routine day to day. So
seven hour time difference, it's not bad when you're just like texting, because like one person, or we do Marco, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but Kelly and I Marco each other, which I honestly, it came out when I'd been living in Europe for, I guess I'd been here for about 6 months in Marco, and it's freaking genius because essentially it's a text message, but it's a face. So instead of like FaceTiming, because Kelly could be asleep when I need to tell him something, I can open my Marco app and actually like record my face. So you're still getting that connection of like seeing each other. And so like I can record my face and be like, hey, I wanted to tell you this, or I wanted to show you this cool thing, or look at what I'm doing or whatever, you know? So it's fantastic. If you guys don't use it, I highly recommend it. Yeah, but
like a little video message, basically.
Yeah. And then that person can respond to your video message when they get the chance. So, like, that's what's great is that I can't imagine if you were somebody, like, I have friends that lived in Europe in, like, the 80s. And I can't imagine, like, somebody would just call your house and to, like, talk to you because maybe they haven't talked to you in, like, 2 or 3 weeks. And they'd be like, oh, well, they're just not home. I guess we'll try again next week. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But so it's like one thing to text to Marco, but it's another thing to be like, hi, what are you doing on this date at this time?
Exactly.
But we managed. So we are going to do strong female characters. And we were trying our best to decide if it was in fandom, pop culture, media. So I'm going to say all of the above. All of the above.
Yeah.
Made a list of 5 each, correct?
Correct.
And I told Kelly this before we started recording, and I'll tell you guys too, because I want to see if I'm right as we go along. We're kind of going to do like a back and forth. One person will talk about theirs. But I am confident, I'm pretty confident that mine and Kelly's list share one for sure. Because I know you. I will be very shocked if one of the ones, the one that I'm thinking of, I'm going to be extremely shocked if it's not on your list. That's what I'll say.
Well, like I said, before we went on, I would bet that we will probably have one that we're going to match on, you know, and like you said, if we don't perchance, then that's going to be like, wow. Okay. Well, you know,
I'm pretty confident in this one, unless there are just others that just won your heart more than this one, but we'll see. I know you've already told me, but tell everybody how you kind of made the deciding factor and chose the 5 female characters that you chose for today.
When I was thinking about this list, it kind of went through a couple of like how do I want to do this? Do I want to do at first I was like, well, do I want to pick superhero characters? Do I want to go? No, that's a comic book thing. If I wanted to do, we could do a list of comic book characters and kind of connect it to that. But I could have chosen one, but I went with live action, characters that, that were from TV and, the movies. And I just went through what I could remember from being a kid. What were some of the big impressions on me as a kid? And it's like, this character is cool. Of course, female and, made some sort of impact. Not like it didn't have to be like some tremendous impact, but it made some impact on, like TV and at least from the TV side. And because strong female characters are they get talked about a lot. I've watched a lot of different I frequent a lot of different YouTube channels, and a lot of it has to do with nerd culture and, you know, comics, movies, Star Trek, Star Wars. And a lot of it, as I think we've said this before, can be really negative. And, you know, people get really nasty about, because they have this idea that they know what the perfect female, positive female character is and what's not. And we're not here to say any of that. I'm here to say, these are the ones that I think growing up were impactful on me and made me realize that, you know, gender was kind of one of those like, okay, well, you have really cool male characters, and you really got really cool female characters. Were there a lot of them growing up? Not
as many as male.
Not as many as now, but, you know, growing up in the 70s, they attempted to do a lot of things and kind of set the stage way back when for female-led TV shows and things like that. So that's kind of where I chose to pick from, you know, mainly because it even to this day, I still talk about them and I still refer to them when discussing this with whoever about strong female positive characters that, you know, are to me still relevant. So
I like the way you put that. Most all of mine are from growing up. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. And I think we were starting to get more female like character representation, like in the strong sense in that point. I think they have even more now, in my opinion. Yeah. I mean, but I think, and maybe you disagree, I don't know, but I think that was the point. Maybe like late 80s, mid 90s, we started having more, I feel like. I don't know.
Yeah. I think like when I was saying like in the 70s, of course, there was a lot of television that was experimental, or maybe experimental is not they were trying a lot of different types of programming, I guess.
Right.
And you got to look at, okay, so the 70s was still a very male chauvinistic time in, you know, that's just the way it was, unfortunately. But there were still some snippets of female characters coming out of that time that were very strong and very positive. And if you ask a lot of Gen X people like myself, we would all probably agree on these characters. So, you know, and now, I mean, you see a lot more of these, of giving females, giving female characters or female actresses, however you want to say it, a platform to play characters and stuff like that. So, I think it's a lot, I don't want to say easier, because I mean, I don't know what, I don't know what the difficulty is, because I'm not an actor. I'm not, you know, I'm just a nerd who has an opinion on things. But I do think that it's probably, I mean, it's got to be a lot easier now to
be heard.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect wording. So yeah, did you want to start, or do you want me to start?
I'm going to let you start. I don't know if I said this, but we're going to go back and forth. So Kelly will give his and kind of talk about that character. and then I'll do one and kind of just go from there.
Excuse me. all right. So I'm going all the way back to when I was 7. It's a long time ago, kids. in 1975, which to me was like, the 70s and 80s were just the golden era for Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, just, you had all kinds of, I mean, if you love superheroes like me, you had all kind of choices. But some of the stuff they had, like most everything on Saturday morning, was animated, but there were a few live action programs. And one of them they had was the Captain Marvel, or the Shazam. They didn't say Captain Shazam Ice's Hour. And the character I remember seeing, or the first kind of strong, powerful, positive role model female character was Isis. And she was played by an actress called Joanna Cameron. And they did two seasons, 20 plus episodes, which that's not, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, two seasons for a television show for kids during that time frame was, I think that's pretty good.
20 episodes was a lot then, if I think about it.
No, I mean, there were 30-minute snippets. So,
oh, like, okay.
Have, like, Shazam would have his 30 minutes, I believe, and then Isis would have hers. It was, like, you know, an hour-long program, you know, cut in two with your two characters. But I just remember because, I mean, I loved Shazam, and at that time I thought that was his name. I didn't know he was Captain Marvel because I didn't know yet. But Isis was really cool. You know, she was his teacher, I believe, like at an elementary school, or maybe I think it was elementary school, and a history teacher. She was also an archaeologist. That's how she found the scarab or the amulet that gave her powers. And it wasn't like a, I mean, it was for kids, so there wasn't like a lot of violence. And she, you know, she was smart. She used her wits and her intelligence to kind of combat whatever the problem was. And she didn't have like supervillains she fought against. It was more like just problems that maybe kids got into, and she had to kind of come in and help them. The same thing with Captain Marvel. It was just really like there was a moral or there was a lesson to be learned in every episode, which I mean, we as kids, we didn't really feel like that, you know, they were trying to beat us over the head with something. They were just telling a story, and it happened to have this one little snippet of like, okay, so, you know, it's not good to play with matches. It's not good for those kind of things. And I just remember loving that show, and just, I watched every episode. I mean, Saturday mornings, I had my lineup, and that's what I watched. Never, you know, missed an episode. And, you know, later on, as I got older, and I have somewhere here, I've got boxes of DVDs that this is when I had my comic book shop. They had it in the preview magazine for order, and it was the complete series for Shazam and Isis. And of course I ordered it for myself. I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to order this for the shop because nobody's going to know what it is. And, you know, but I ordered it. And I, even when I got it in, I would play it on my DVD player, and some of the guys would go, what is this? I was like, it's Saturday morning cartoons, guys. It's Isis and Captain, or I would say Captain Marvel then, cause I was like, you know, it's not Shazam, it's Captain Marvel. And the guys got a kick out of it, but it's one of those characters that I look at and go, that's what a strong female character is. It's someone that doesn't have to punch you in the face, though she did occasionally, but she really fought with her wits and her smarts, you know, and did it with a style, you know. And that's my first in my little list. So
okay,
what was yours?
My first one does punch people in the face.
Well, I she mean does. there's nothing wrong with punching people in the face.
My first one is Lucy Lawless's Xena.
I see it.
Xena, Warrior Princess. I absolutely adored this show. I actually really liked her sidekick, Gabriella, which I think is a strong female character in her own right.
Oh, but yeah,
I think overall, Xena was just something else. And then, like, growing up, like, following Lucy Lawless and learning what kind of person she is, she herself is just a strong person. I am assuming most people our age remember Xena, but if not, it was I think the episodes were like 30 minutes. Do you remember?
I think they were like an hour. I think they were an hour long, or you know, 45 minutes. You know, you think out the commercial breaks.
Yeah. But it was a fantasy, action, adventure, supernatural television series filmed in New Zealand. I think it ran from like 95 to 2001, which I didn't realize it actually ran until the early 2000s. Like, don't remember it going so long.
I think it was a spinoff of Hercules.
It was.
Sorbo. Yeah. I don't know if it was intended to be a spinoff or if it was something that just kind of happened. Sometimes that does,
I think if I remember correctly, because I remember she shows up in Hercules, and my brothers loved Hercules, and our grandfather had one of those where he had two VCRs, and one was meant for the whole purpose of, like, dubbing.
Yeah.
So he would record the episodes every week. Like, he had so many shows that he knew a time they came on. He had that thing set to record. And so he recorded Hercules for my brothers. And I remember Xena showing up on there. And I believe I read some years back that she came on that reoccurring for, like, three episodes. And originally, they had plans that she was going to die in the third time she appeared. And apparently, and you have to think, this is 1997, 98, maybe. I don't remember how many years into Hercules this took place. But the public outcry and attention for her character was so large, they were like, we can't kill her.
Yeah.
We can't do this. So they decided to launch a spinoff, and I'm so glad they did. It's listed as like a top cult show. It's ranked as Bravo's 100 greatest TV characters. There were comic books, video games, and she would go to conventions and
Me and the guys would watch Hercules. A lot of times we would watch it just to spoof on it. I mean, because it was very cheesy. And usually right after, by the time Hercules came on, just as we were finishing up whatever D&D game we were playing, whatever session it was, me or Jim or Chris. And so we would just all pile into the living room to watch this hokey demigod Hercules, and we would rip on it, and it was fun. It was funny for us. But then, like, when Xena was like a different thing, because we were all guys.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, she's badass. You know,
and she was oftentimes saving the guys, and she would show up to like save Hercules's butt several times.
Yeah, she was. We kind of lost our like ripping on, you know, shows when for some reason, I think Xena was like, because we're all guys, you know, in our early 20s, some still in high school, some of the guys that hung out with us. And I think it was just the fact that she was a very attractive, powerful woman that was beating the crap out of people that we just didn't make any comments. We just watched, you know, it was like, there's nothing bad I can say about this show. You know,
and somehow it was less cheesy than Hercules, even though it was the same world, writers, the same everything. Like, it somehow was less cheesy. And I remember as a young girl, so in 95 when this came out, I would have been 10. Mm-hmm. So I was like, heck yeah, we're punching people. Woohoo! Like,
yeah.
And she's swinging swords around. And like, this is probably, which I already liked fantasy before this, but this was probably the reason I now read fantasy novels. Like,
yeah, I could see that. Cause, and a lot of my female friends, it wasn't just a gamer house, but I had female friends over, and they were fans of Xena as well. And one of my friends who, her name's Crystal. I met her shortly after I opened up the store. We were talking, one of our first or second conversations we had we went out for coffee and we were talking about TV shows. She talked about how Xena was kind of her gay awakening or what her, you know.
I have heard that from multiple people because they were like, it's not just Lucy Lawless, it's also Gabriella.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard that from several of my friends that are LGBTQ plus. Yeah. Like, they're like, no, but Xena. And I was like, you know,
yep.
I'm sorry, I'm straight white girl. I don't know what you're talking about, but she badass, so I can kind of understand. I kind of get it. I get it.
I understand. I mean, I didn't get it until like later. But I mean, I when Crystal and I were talking, I was like, yeah, I could see it. It's not far fetched. You know, it is a lot of folks awakening. And I mean, the show in general, like you said, it wasn't as hokey or cheesy as like the Hercules show was. Mm-hmm. I think it had more darker tones, and I think that's what they wanted, to have kind of a darker show, I guess, and have darker story arcs and things like that. But
I feel like they also did a really good job of doing some of the storylines. Would like, it really followed her and Gabriella's friendship. And then like women supporting women. There were many times where they saved women, and when in the process of like whatever the story arc was where they had to save these people and say that there was a group of women they were saving, those women ended up becoming part of saving themselves. It was always very just kind of like powerful.
Right.
And then, you know, I don't know. I always really resonated with it for some reason, and just really looked up to the characters and enjoyed every bit of it. I also really love mythology. And it is set in like, it's like ancient Greece, but not ancient Greece. Like, it's fake ancient Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Overall, that's my first one.
Excuse me.
For sure. Well, it's not the first one I was introduced to, but that's the first one that had, like, when I was making my list, I was like, without question, Xena.
Nice. That's a good pick. I like that one.
Thank you.
My second is, it comes, let's see, 19. It's 1975 because when I was checking on dates, The Adventures of Wonder Woman with Linda Carter came out the same year in 75.
Okay.
Now, Wonder Woman, again, is an icon. I mean, she is the epitome of strong female character.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and for excuse me, for me, that's my second pick. Was as a kid growing up, watching Wonder Woman on TV was, again, it's a cartoon character, or it's a comic book character. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was just getting into comics and had a very small fledgling collection, and I had, you know, a couple of issues of Wonder Woman and kind of knew the basics of who she was, and but seeing her on the small screen and played by Linda Carter, who is an amazing actress and person in general, just an all around, you know, like they say, like, you know, we got to protect Dolly Parton and Keanu Reeves. I've got Linda Carter in that group too. Yeah. She's just a very powerful person, a powerful actress. And, but, you know, going to see or seeing Wonder Woman every week on television for a few years, again, this is a very powerful character, a female-led television show.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was kind of an oddity back then in the 70s. I mean, you had female characters that led shows and things like that. I'm not saying that, you know, she was the first, but as far as, you know, me and my opinion and what I saw, I was just like, she's the best, you know. And my dad loved watching it with me. I never really got that until I got older. and kind of understood, like, oh, Dad liked it because, you know, Lena Carter was in her Wonder Woman outfit. And, you know, because as a kid, I'm not thinking anything, how do you, sexually, I guess.
Yeah, we don't have any idea of that. That's the kind of the
You
same as like
know.
the Xena. I think if you were
Right.
older, you have like your friends, you probably had your awakening. But like for me, it was just like my brothers probably had a different reason for wanting to watch Xena with me, even though they were very young, but they were like,
Yeah.
ooh, she's pretty, you know, like,
Right.
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I thought she was pretty, of course, because I knew what pretty was, but
Right.
her like bending steel bars or what I thought were steel bars around people and holding up a Jeep or leaping from one
That's
place
what
to
hit,
another,
yeah.
the lasso, all of the stuff that came with the Wonder Woman character was what I was like, oh, that's awesome. And they even brought in Wonder Girl, Donna Troy, in a couple of episodes in canonically in her costume. And I thought that was, you know, 'cause she was a member of the Teen Titans, and that was just like a really, I mean, other than seeing, 'cause the Batman television show came out way before I was born. I was born in 69, so I saw reruns of that later on.
Same.
But Wonder Woman was kind of like, I saw this when it came out, was kind of my first comic book character TV show that I was like hooked on. The only other show I think I really gravitated towards was like The Hulk, which came out in the 80s later on. But yeah, I will always have like the most respect for the character of Wonder Woman, because she's, you know, she's the comic book matriarch of female characters. And yeah, there are a lot of other good female characters out there, but for me, she's, you know, she's at the top. And as a TV show, they really did a good job with that too. It was very well paced. You know, it was written for the time, I mean, in the 70s, so a lot of, there was some campiness to it, but really and truthfully, you know, Linda Carter had a lot to say in how things were kind of done, and did some of her own stunts, you know, where, you know, when I learned that, I watched an interview with her, and she was talking about how she did some of her own stunts, and you know, she didn't do like a lot of them, but she wanted to do the ones she felt she could, and that the, you know, whatever the production company would let her do, because you know they have legal and insurance things, and they gotta be careful. But I was like, wow, she wanted to do some of that stuff, so you know, it kind of made me respect Linda Carter a little bit more. But yeah, that's my second
Okay.
pick.
So my second pick actually would have come before Xena, like timeline wise. But mine is Angela Lansbury's Jessica Fletcher on Murder, She Wrote.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So I technically, it came out in 1984. I wasn't born until 85, but it ran until 1990. I don't remember.
It ran a long time, if I remember.
Yeah,
I don't remember the number of years, but
96, 96 it says.
yeah.
And then there have been four television films since then that ran between 97 and 2003.
Yeah.
So, but I used to watch this with my grandmother, and then Angela Lansbury and my grandmother have a lot of similarities, facial structure, just like her characters, how she always appears in interviews. She just reminds me of my grandmother as well. And
Yeah.
I think what I really loved about this show so much is she's, I mean, in some senses, she's a busybody, but she's very smart and she notices things and she pays
Right.
attention. And she looks around and goes, something's not quite right. And no one in the, I mean, occasionally, but for the most part, everyone in the show treat her with so much respect and dignity that they don't turn her into what she could easily be, like this just nosy neighbors that solves mysteries. And instead, she's like well respected. She's like, she calls like, she's like, let me just call the commissioner. Like, she has developed a relationship with various high people in this show on her own. And I think at the time, this show started, like I said, in 1984, I believe it was. So to have a, like you said, there were female-led shows, but this was probably, and I could be wrong, again, I was born in 85, so I could be wrong, but this, I feel like this was probably the only female-led, like, mystery crime drama that was on at the time. I mean, you had Magnum P.I., which this actually was related to. I don't remember how it happened, but this show happened because of Magnum P.I. And then there ended up being a show spinoff called The Law and Harry McGraw that was because of Murder, She Wrote. But I, at the time, I can't think of a crime drama that, other than maybe the BBC doing some of the, like, Miss Marple, Agatha Christie stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know of any, like, crime drama that had a major female lead where she was the main character. Everyone else was just the supporting cast.
Right, right.
So I loved her. I love, you know, I still to this day watch crime dramas and...
Oh, yeah. I love real crime TV myself, or watching, you know, like Forensic Files and you know,
I do both the real and the fake. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, you know, the reenactment type things and stuff like that.
Yeah. Or just like NCIS, CSI. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like those too. So,
but I've seen snippets of her show. I know her show, and I can't think of, I was trying to think of any other show that was similar to hers or to a show like that.
Right.
And I can't think of any. But again, you have this actress portraying this character for many, many years. I mean, for a show to go past, you know, three or four seasons.
It was 12 seasons.
Right, yeah. Right. Up to that point, that's rare. Yeah. Really rare. I mean, you're looking at, like, MASH, I think, only went, like, 9 seasons or...
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. And the show, I think, was also recognized for, like, a lot of different awards and things like
that. Oh, yeah. So, I have it pulled up, and it said she was nominated for 10 Golden Globes. She won 4 of the 10, along with nominations for 12 Emmys. She earned her record for the most Golden Globe nominations and wins for Best Actress in a Television Drama Series, and the most Emmy nominations for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series. And then, by the way, you know how important this is, but... this was a CBS Sunday night show.
Yeah, yeah.
That was big then.
That's
that was a big deal.
I want to say I think Sunday was like a dead zone for programming. I don't,
because we didn't have like all the football. I mean, yeah, we had football, so don't come at me. But like, I don't remember it being as big of like a takeover of Sunday.
Yeah,
I don't remember it.
I don't remember like Sunday was like a day that I really never watched a lot of TV. I don't think my parents did. Well, I mean, they probably watched movies or reruns or whatever, but just for her show to be that, the first time I ever saw Angela Lansbury was in the Walt Disney film Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yeah.
And
she's also fantastic in.
Yeah, exactly. Which my sister took me to when I was young with my nephew, her son, and it was like the first movie experience I had, and was really, really fun. And she, you know, I mean she's a character that, like I said, I don't know a lot about her. I know what her character is, you know, and for them to be able to. You know, when you look at this person, like, not every female character has to be carrying a Pulse rifle or, you know, punching people. You know, the powerful female or the strong female character, however you want to, you know, say it, can come in many forms and do different things. So, I like that one. That's a good pick.
So in the movie, or in the movie, well, they were movies. In the show, she was a mystery novelist. Mm-hmm. She had been an English teacher. There was a few different things that she'd done. I think at one point she's a congresswoman. But she, like the whole backstory on her is just super fascinating. It's like she had ancestors, they ended up coming from County Cork, Ireland to America. And it's just, I don't know, it's just really fantastic because in the sense of things, she's just an everyday person. She's just really smart and pays really good attention. And then I played the video games that came out. I liked those too.
She kind of reminds me, and I mean, she's very much like a detective.
Yeah, you know, she was. She figures, an amateur detective. Yeah.
She's like, a male equivalent would probably be like Sherlock Holmes or someone of that nature. Yeah. That basically they have that ability to just read and watch and observe things mm-hmm. that most people wouldn't notice, you know, you know, I wish I had, that's one of those things I wish I had the ability to kind of see things and pick up on things quicker than I do sometimes. But yeah, the character, that's amazing. I mean, when you look at the longevity of her show and like I said, in general, that's just a rarity. You don't, there's other than like, God, like you talk about like Gunsmoke that ran for 25 fucking years or whatever.
Oh my God, my dad watched that religiously. And
yeah. My grandparents watched it and I understand Westerns now. I appreciate them now, but as a kid, if it didn't have, you know, a Batarang or, you know, something comic bookish or whatever, I didn't care. I was very super focused on what I liked, and that was not it. So, all right. So are you finished?
Yeah, you can go.
Okay. My third is again, from the '70s, and I've kind of, this might look like it's a pattern. It's really not. It's just from my stages of growing up. Again, another character that came out of the '70s that also came out of another TV program. This is a spinoff, kind of like Xena, the Bionic Woman.
Oh, with, yes.
with Lindsay Wagner played the main character, Jamie Summers. And she was a love interest to the $6 Million Man. Mm-hmm. And they ended up spinning out and giving her own show. This is going to be kind of short. I'm going to make this one kind of short because it kind of goes with the Wonder Woman thing, is that here you have this totally brand new character. And again, she would work, or she started working for let me look that up because I had it pinned. The OSI, the Office of Scientific Intelligence. She started working for them because they were the ones that rebuilt her, basically, after Steve Austin, the $6 Million Man, was like, hey, you know, rebuild her like you did me because she's dying. And, you know, a lot of her episodes were, again, you know, kind of cheesy, kind of hokey. But again, here I am as a kid and I'm seeing, you know, back to back these very strong, powerful female characters. Now, the Bionic Woman is kind of comic bookish in a way, so that's what appealed to me. It was like, you know, it appealed to my comic book fascination, and it really, like, I'm not tooting my own horn by saying this, but this is just me. I was never chauvinistic about anything really in life. And I think a lot of the reasons why I wasn't, as a young kid, I was shown these things. Mm-hmm. And I saw them and saw that, you know, females were just as capable as men. That's what I took from these shows, from like Isis to Wonder Woman to the Bionic Woman. I saw the potential that women could do things that men could do. And there was no, you know, that's why as I grew up and I started to kind of understand what male chauvinism was and you know, girls can't do that. Girls can't be this. Girls can't be that. I was always like, why? Why not? And I'm thankful. I'm really thankful for these shows because I think that's why I never really had a chauvinistic view of things. And when you look at the landscape of television at that point in time, again, you had a lot of, you know, male-centric shows, and you had detective shows, police programs, and very few female-led shows. And this was another one that kind of had its own little time in the spotlight. And I've got a couple of honorable mentions like you, I'm going to have to say, but I bumped one to put her in here because maybe people listening, maybe from my time period and will say, oh, I remember watching that. But yeah, that's my third. It's Jamie Summers, the Bionic Woman.
Okay. And I will say, I don't feel like you're tooting your own horn. And as someone who's been your friend for 10 plus years now, if someone ever came to me and they were like, well, he's just a misogynist, I'd be like, then you don't know him and you don't know what you're talking about. Absolutely do not know what you're talking about.
I mean, I might be capable of having a bad take on something when it comes to maybe a female character, but I really try not to go from a chauvinistic point of view. It's usually from a written or from a it's mainly from a written point of view. Like,
yeah,
that person was written poorly. It's not the character. It's the person who put the dialogue in there that just, for me, just right. Didn't do it, you know. But yeah. What's your next one?
So my next one is, I don't know, some people may find this one odd, but she gave me hope growing up. Mm-hmm. And that is Lisa Simpson from The Simpsons.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's, yeah, I get that. Yeah,
my uncle even calls me Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
So because Lisa, even when Bart would make fun of her or Homer would not mean to make fun of her, but make fun of her because he genuinely didn't understand.
Yeah.
They have this odd family in the sense of like Marge always encourages her, even her teeth. But I resonated with like the teachers are like, oh my God, she won't shut up. Oh my God. Why is she always right? Oh my God. Could she stop raising her hand? As a undiagnosed, didn't know she had an ADHD child, I was Lisa. Mm-hmm. Through and through, like reading books way above my, and listen, I don't anymore. I read all kinds of stuff. At the time I read things I shouldn't have been reading. But she, and we technically weren't supposed to watch The Simpsons, but we still did. And I just felt like a connection to her. Not her being a vegan, but that's okay. No offense to anyone that's vegan. I just, right. I grew up on a cattle farm, so you know. But it was just a lot of things about her. She's very matter of fact, and when she decides she's going to do something, she does it. Like for example, and I know it has to do with the writing and Yardley Smith's fantastic voiceover. However, they stick to what Lisa says she's going to do. Like she changes to Buddhism, she becomes a vegetarian, she, the episodes where she's like trying to just be a girl that has a crush or things like that. And technically, fun fact, Lisa and I would be about the same age if they aged her. Because she was born in 1984. So.
Yeah.
If they ever aged her. But she's perpetually eight. So. And she's always matter of fact. Like, even if I don't agree with the political stances of the character, I'm not saying I do or don't, but I'm saying even if I don't, she's just matter of fact. And she is herself. And I think in a cartoon where, even though it's for adults, having this very powerful 8-year-old be like, I understand you're adults, but this is who I am. And this is who I'm going to continue to be. You can't take that from me, is extremely important when you are a child sitting back watching this. So to me, she was always, and you know, again, video games, comic books, movies, The Simpsons have a whole section at Universal Studios, which is phenomenal. I got to take my son to it a few years ago. That, I don't know. She actually is ranked by TV Guide as 11th. She's actually tied with her brother Bart on the list of top 50 greatest cartoon characters of all time. And listen, Bart, if we were talking about strong, even though he gets into so much trouble, if we were talking about like male characters or cartoon characters, he'd probably be on my list too for other reasons, even though he's constantly getting in trouble. She's done her character, even though she's a cartoon character, has actually incited like environmental like stuff, ethical treatment mm-hmm. for animals. She's actually included, like, her name is included on the most animal-friendly TV characters of all time. And Yardley Smith has won Emmys for her voice performance of Lisa. Yeah. And she's been awarded her Hollywood Walk of Fame star as well. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like I said, this, you know, for those that are familiar with how The Simpsons originally came out, they were not their own television show. They appeared on the Tracy Ullman show.
Yeah.
I would have been like 2. So I do not remember that.
I do. I didn't.
You do?
Yeah. I don't remember what network the Tracy Ullman show was on. I want to say it was Fox.
I think. Yeah, it was Fox because Fox agreed to do the spinoff for The Simpsons. I do know that. And
I want to say we had just got the Fox affiliate on.
For Dothan?
Whatever cable we had at the time, because I mean, we were slowly becoming, you know, cable was becoming a bigger thing and we were getting more channels and all that. But I remember seeing that, you know, the Tracy Ullman show and having this weird cartoon of The Simpsons, and then it kind of springing out of it. And well, you know, the rest is history. I mean, it's
it's still currently running.
Yep. Long running cartoon television show, you know, kind of like the way the Flintstones were back in the 60s.
My son and I actually, Caden and I let him start watching The Simpsons. I don't know how many years ago now. I think when he was about 12 or 13, we started allowing him to do the, we started with the Halloween episodes because he came across like a marathon of those on, you know, one of those like FX or something.
Yeah.
Yep. And I was like, you know what? Those actually, I don't remember them being horrible. So I showed him like my favorite one that has like the story of the Raven, and that was it. And he wanted to watch more, and we were like, okay, let's slowly get into that. So I think it was the time he was about 13. We started like watching it with him. That way we could, because most of the time it's pretty like where it stuff is insinuated.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's like, oh. But he and I now have run through, I think he has literally started from the beginning and watched all of them. And we realized the other day that some reason we didn't finish last season and the new season has started. So we are finishing last season and starting the new one. So like I still actively, watch it. And like, one of the things I do remember from my childhood is when I was about 15, they had the DVDs. It's like when Best Buy was kind of big in our area.
Yeah.
And they had like Black Friday, the DVD for one season was going to be like $10. And I remember my mom going and standing in line and trying to get as many seasons of The Simpsons for me as she could, because that's what I wanted. Like,
yeah,
that was like literally all I had asked for Christmas. And I have no clue where those are now. I think she actually ended up not being able to get very many. I mean, because that's, I mean, the popularity of that show. But it's been running for a very long time. And Lisa is consistent through all the years. And I kind of hope that there's some other young lady out there whose parents are allowing her to watch The Simpsons, even though I wasn't allowed to, that resonates with Lisa.
I was a, as a teenager, I think, when The Simpsons, had been out for a while. I remember
they got their own show in 89, so.
Yeah, I was 16, 17,
18. I was four.
I remember, my nephew, who is a few years younger than me, my mother despised The Simpsons because of Bart, because, Eat My Shorts. She thought that was the most horrible thing.
Yes, I remember that telling ever, me about this.
And she just...
And she didn't like the... Didn't she? She also didn't like the Don't Have a Cow Man. She
yeah,
didn't like that
yeah.
either, did she?
She didn't like kids being smart aleck, because, that was something that, as a kid, I didn't, but there were a few times that I think I was naturally kind of a smart ass.
Me too. Okay.
And occasionally it would slip and mom would be like, watch it. And that's all she had to say. And I was like, ooh, I talked a little too much. And so I just kind of learned not to. But see, Bart would, and she just, that was like my mom's pet peeve. She just did not, because she was, she's a boomer. That's where she came from. And that's her era. Yeah. And it's like kids were, saw and not heard, or however the phrase is, And I mean, she wasn't like a tyrant. She didn't smack me if I said something. She just was like, she did whip me up until I was, I think the last time I was like 11 or 12. And I think I've said this story before, where she whipped me, and I, this was where I was like really angry with her. And I was like, are you done? And she said, okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And that's where I thought, oh, I got the last word here. She went in my room and started getting all my comics and got my Atari and got all of my fun stuff. And she said, I'm taking all these. And when you can act like a, whatever person and not be a smart ass, you can have them back. And I was, for 2 weeks, I was in hell. I didn't have anything. So I learned my lesson not to be a smart ass to my mom. But yeah, that was, The Simpsons was irrelevant about a lot of things. And that was just something my mom was just not down for. So she didn't allow us to watch it, though. I watched it in my room. I just shut the door. my nephew would, and I would watch it in there, and we could hear if mom was coming down the hall. So we would just flip the channel to whatever. And she was never wiser. She might have known, but as long as it wasn't on her TV or she, and where she could hear it, it really wasn't. She just didn't want to deal with it. But yeah, Lisa Simpson is a very awesome character as far as, female characters are. And again, it's not every character has to punch people in the face or whatever,
And seldom does.
No, I mean, she's not. Face.
I think she has sometimes, but yeah. Because technically, when you look at the chart, age-wise, my mom was a baby boomer, and my dad was an elder Gen X. So I was not supposed to be watching it, but I'm glad I did, because she stuck with me. And then it's actually something that my son and I can now share and bond over. So I'm glad that young Miranda snuck yeah. and watched The Simpsons. But yeah. Who's your next one?
My next one, and okay, so we're moving from me being a young kid, you know.
Yeah.
This is me at 16, and I went to the movies a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so me and my friends, we would go to the movies every weekend. We'd find whatever. We would kind of watch anything. You know, we liked sci-fi, mm-hmm. car films, but, I mean, if we saw something that seemed cool. And one of these movies, one of my friends, I don't remember me picking it, was like one of my friends, like, hey, there's this movie called The Legend of Billie Jean. Let's go see it. And I remember the only reason I was interested in seeing it was that Helen Slater was in it, and she had Supergirl.
Oh.
And this movie for me was like one of my first, like, oh my God, I was crushing on this character that Helen Slater was portraying. The Legend of Billie Jean. It's this character, you know, it starts out with her and her younger brother, who is played by Christian Slater, Christian Slater player. Yeah. And, you know, they're kind of, I don't want to say like outcasts, but they're not rich. They're, you know, they're from this poor I don't want to say like super poor, but they're not, you know, they're not
in like middle class,
something like that. Yeah. And so her younger brother gets like this Honda scooter. It's, you know, and the typical jock and his lackey show up with their, wherever they're at. And they end up wrecking or destroying his scooter, and she is livid. And so she goes to the father of the guy, the punk guy, jock, whatever, and demands the money to, you know, for the scooter.
Mm-hmm.
And this dad character, or the guy's dad, is a real sleaze, and he's like, well, you know, we might be able to work something out. And he's insinuating.
Ick.
And so something happens, and she ends up doing something and having to go on the run. And it's all about, you know, like, fair is fair. We want what's right. And that's, you know, for him to, you know, pay for the scooter and to, you know, and it becomes this whole ordeal where she goes on the lam with her brother and one of her friends and kind of starts this whole kind of cult of personality behind her. That, I mean, it's not her, it's like bigger than her that kind of starts up, and, mm-hmm. and she ends up cutting her hair really short. And I didn't, this is where I was like, wow, she's just badass. This, you know, character that Helen Slater's portraying, and she just kind of grows throughout the movie, where, you know, it started out like, you know, it's about this scooter and having justice done and all of these things. And I need to go back and rewatch it, because I know I'm leaving out a lot, but if you get a chance to watch it, it's not a bad watch. It's definitely 80s centric, because it was mm-hmm. put out in 85, and I was 16 at that point. And like I said, I already had kind of a crush on Helen Slater because she played Supergirl, but this made me appreciate, I think, more of her as an actress, because she really was portraying, you know, somebody who had gone through kind of a lot. And you have this person that was like, hey, you know, you can have this. You just gotta. And she wasn't happy. She was not having that kind of sleaze.
No.
And it was very empowering. The way I saw it was very empowerment for young women, you know, and It still holds up.
I hate this tagline IMDb gave the movie, though. I'm not even going to lie. I have to complain about that.
What did they give it?
It just says a Texas teenager cuts her hair short and becomes an outlaw murderer with her brother and friends.
Oh, that's... yeah, it's... Yeah.
I mean...
If you want to tear it down to, like, its base, you know, its baseline, I guess,
but it's so much more than that.
It's a lot better. It's one of the movies, like I said, I probably need to go back and rewatch. I actually don't have it in my DVD library because I've really stopped buying DVDs.
Same.
The way things are, it is now, like, I may start going and buying stuff because, like, the way the streaming service is, a lot of this stuff you may not be able to see.
But at this point, you're paying for cable again.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's another rant.
Yeah. So I may, I think I may go to Amazon after this and look it up and maybe order it just to have it so that I can watch it at my leisure. But yeah, that's my.
I had forgotten. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that was my fourth strong female character.
Okay. Well, I pulled it up as you were talking about it, and I had forgotten that the voice of my number three was in that movie. Yardley Smith was in it.
Yeah, she was. She played her little sidekick, her friend that you know, went with her and her brother on this adventure. So
I had totally forgotten that. So that's neat.
Me too. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's kind of a neat kind of coincidence.
Yeah. So my number four and my number five were on TV concurrently, like at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to decide which one to choose next. I think I'm going to go with Dr. Dana Catherine Scully.
Ooh, from the X-Files.
Yes. It came out in 1993 and went for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how many episodes now, or seasons, excuse me. And then, it came back. Didn't go as well as we hoped there, yeah. But 11 seasons total and some movies. But I think what I love so much about Scully is, one, she really is the, like, yin to Mulder's yang, honestly. And listen, he's full-on believer, right? And she is not. And that's the difference. As a kid watching this, I was full-on like, woohoo, aliens, woohoo! I was a Mulder. But there was something about her and the way she portrayed herself. She was a young woman that just wanted to do well, and she was determined to do well in this job. And I, watching her through the years, become more of a believer. And unfortunately, she has to go through some pretty crappy stuff with Mulder for that to happen. She's kind of the skeptic for almost first full seven seasons. I think there's some things that, like, makes her question her beliefs. Because she's very science and very matter of fact. I think kind of like Lisa, she has like this very like, nope, this is how things are. I think changing that, like I said, she goes through some crap. Mulder gets abducted, and I think that's what finally changes it. But the whole time, she kind of stays true to herself, even when she becomes a believer. You know, she still stays herself. Mm-hmm. And I've always really just admired the way that the character was portrayed. And Gillian Anderson is a phenomenal actress, of course, as well.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, and who doesn't want to work for the FBI as, you know, and get stuck with Mulder? Because I would. That Mulder smolder, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, she she was very much in the 90s and watching the X-Files was one of me and my friends kind of you know, that was something we would stop whatever we were doing to take in that hour of TV to watch. And was just a very good show, was very smart.
Very well done.
And you had a show that, and with her character, again, her being the skeptic, her being the kind of
religious.
Yeah, and having that kind of her own kind of voice of reason about things was really good to kind of balance out the Mulder character. And she's definitely one of those characters that I wasn't like the biggest X-Files fans, but I did love the show. Some of my friends were more into it than I was, and I learned a lot of it through them. So it was interesting to watch the show with someone who is like a little more passionate than you, because then you kind of, you may miss something and they catch on to it. That, hey, did you see that? Or did you catch that?
Right.
So,
or let me tell you how this, like why this makes sense, because an episode, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I was all about this show. Like, I absolutely loved it. I don't understand how I was allowed to watch this, but not The Simpsons, but that's a discussion for my mother. my mother also loved this show. I think I loved it more than her. She was really, really, her thing was more of like Stargate, Star Trek. But she did really enjoy X-Files. And I rewatched it a few years ago, and in my opinion, it holds up. And maybe that's because I love it so much, but I feel like it holds up.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. My last character is, I know these, we're going back a year to, well, a couple of years to 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I've chose all these characters from my youth and, you know, kind of like just as a precipice of, or in my teenage years, I guess.
Right.
We're stepping back. This is when I was 10 and I couldn't go see this film unless one of my parents would take me. And the movie's Aliens. And of course, my parents wouldn't have taken me to that. So I didn't get to see Aliens until a few years later during the whole golden age of VHS tapes and renting movies and all of this. So Ellen Ripley, played by Sigourney Weaver, to me is like one of the top-notch sci-fi, science fiction, strong, you know, female characters.
Yes.
Smart, you know, very driven person. And seeing her in the Alien, I mean, the Aliens movie scared the crap out of me. I mean, it was, you know, very suspenseful. You really didn't see the alien, but a few times.
So scary.
it was the whole like you don't know what it is. You haven't, I mean, you're processing it, you're kind of creating it in your mind. And something my favorite author, Harlan Ellison, once said is that, you know, reading a book or reading something scary, you know, in your mind, that million times scarier than what any person can put on the screen or put on the, you know, that can show you something. Your mind can make all of those things so much scarier. And that's what that movie kind of reminded me of, because you didn't see the thing except on a few small glimpses. And eventually you kind of, I mean, we know what the alien looks like now because of, you know, Aliens and the whole thing with the whole history of the Aliens franchise.
Right.
But at the time, it was really,
it was up for you to just,
it was freaky.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of the trope of, you know, the last, you know, female character, you know, made it out. her and her cat. You know, so.
So, yes, I would classify her as a final girl, but I think a lot of final girls are powerful.
A lot of them kind of become that through whatever they went through to get to that point. But Ripley just, I mean, you saw it in the first film in Aliens or Alien. In Aliens, you really get to see where, I mean, when she goes back for Newt and she's like got the two pulse rifles slung over her shoulder, she's got the grenade launchers loaded up. She's like, fuck you, I'm coming to get my kid and fuck anything that gets in my way. And, you know, she didn't have to, you know, she just by her own, you know, yeah, she's scared. She's scared, you know, I mean, she's not, it shows me what someone is willing to do, push past their fear to do something very important, which is to find Newt and to get her out of there. And I remember now, see, Aliens, I got to go see in the theater because by then I was old enough. And I remember me and three of my good friends at the time, you know, we were probably, Aliens had been out for a while. So when we went to see it, it was mainly us and maybe one or two other people. We had a blast watching this. It was just like, we didn't know what to expect. And everything that happened that very moment, I mean, I just remember we were cheering at various points and laughing our ass off, you know, when it was like, you know, what's his name, it was like, game over, man, game over, you know, just, it was such a good film and all the characters were really well done. But I mean, like Ripley was already established and she came in when they were using, like, she's going to be an observer. She's going to be here. And she's telling Burke, look, oh, this is what I saw. Y'all shouldn't be fucking around with this shit, you know? And it's like, we've got Marines here. We're going to be fine. And she's like, you just know she's thinking, you guys are fucked. You know, this
Okay.
And that goes with, like, you know, writing. They wrote Ripley as not somebody who's stupid. And she's seen these things. And so, you know, it's just, she's just a great character. And I, you know, when people talk about, you know, well, they don't know how to write, or, you know, there's not enough, or there's not this, or, you know, I'm like, look, there have been plenty of, I'm not saying we don't need any more. We need, I mean, I'm fine with writing. I mean, if the character is well-written, great. I mean, that's really what it boils down to for me, is just that the female character is written in a way where it's not exploitive, you know, or what have you. I mean,
that is very frustrating.
There's a lot of that out there. And, and when I think about Ripley, I mean, that's just somebody came up with these characters and whoever, you know, wrote the character Ripley and came up with that character did a really good job. And I guess it goes to the script writing and follow up. And this is where we really see Ripley in her element and pushed to the limit. What, you know, hey, I'm going down there to get this kid. You know, this kid's already lost her family. I told her I would be there for, and now she's, you know, I'm doing this. And, you know, she's just a great character. And I think, you know, as far as like sci-fi characters or female characters in sci-fi, she's up there, you know, in the top area, because she's, you know, she's awesome.
I actually almost put her on my list. She was one of the ones that I was like, but then I didn't meet her until a little bit older. So I was like, I don't know. But I will say, I have come across many articles where when people are like, oh, well, it's just because we can't write characters that way. She's often used as an example.
Yeah.
I also have a friend that took a college class, and I would have to ask them what the name of the class was, but it was like strong characters, you know, written characters or something. It was in regards to writing characters, but it was like female characters, and her character and the actress's portrayal of the character are consistently brought up and were even discussed in this college lecture on how, yes, you absolutely can write a strong female character that can also be portrayed in a strong by a strong female. So I do know that that's a fantastic one to choose because it is brought up time and time again that it can be done. And that's the example.
Yeah, exactly. She's been like an archetype for like all kind of like if you look at other media or other, you know, characters that have been developed or whatever, they're, you know, they kind of pull things from Ripley and as far as far as like those personality traits or what have you. But yeah, that's my top five. I mean, there are a lot more, but these are the ones that I kind of decided on a formula and I'd kind of just went with this formula. So
what's the ones that your brain said, this is who resonated with us. This is who made a difference to me.
And I've got three honorable mentions that I'll, okay. I mean, we'll do those.
Yeah. So my final one, I'm really surprised. I thought it was going to be one of yours. I won't lie. I was like, I for sure this is going to be one of yours.
Yeah.
It's probably one of your honorable mentions then. Possibly. I could be wrong. But that is Sarah Michelle Gellar's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep. She is my top honorable mention.
And don't get me wrong, Christy Swanson's Buffy the Vampire Slayer paved the door. She paved the way. And I love that movie. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. But the Buffy that we get in the television series, especially the age that I was when Buffy aired, we got 7 seasons.
Yep.
First aired in 1997. Ran from 97 to 2003 on the WB. Yep. So in 97, I would have been 12, 13. So like I'm a teenager the whole time because I graduated in 2003. So like this is my teenage years. So you can, and I was in high school and this takes place, she's in high school and then college in the later years. But like,
yeah,
she was, I don't know, because she was just trying to be a regular girl.
Yeah.
Who was liked, and she was pretty, but she dealt with bullies. And so not only was she dealing with like supernatural beings, but it's at the core, it's still just a teen comedy drama.
Yep.
Dealing with everyday shit, but at night dealing with the not everyday shit.
She, you know, you could kind of go, well, she's kind of a ditzy blonde, or she's kind of a, to me, she never really was that. She was very witty and she was very kind of, she had her own kind of lingo, the way Buffy spoke. The way
well, and that would have been that time. Know. I mean, it's in California and it would, during the 90s, if you remember, there was this whole language that people were speaking that, you know, people older didn't understand.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's relevant to the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know, to me, and again, it was probably the time when it came out. But it's just a phenomenal, and the whole supporting cast and the whole like Scooby gang.
Yeah.
And Scooby Doo is one of my all time favorite cartoons ever. So I just, it works. And again, I had a huge addiction to the 1992 Buffy the Vampire Slayer film. So in the end, when they decided to make the series and the casting, not only for Buffy, but her supporting cast was just done so well. It works. I will say, even though we're talking about strong female characters, I just want to put this out there to everyone that maybe sometimes, and I didn't meet Sarah Michelle Gellar because I would be all about that. I think sometimes, and you were with me when I did this, maybe you shouldn't always meet people from television shows you really like, though.
Yeah.
That Nicholas Brendon interaction was just strange. My interaction was
strange. Yeah, I feel bad for the guy in a way. I mean, he's kind of, he's done his own thing. He's got addiction issues, and I myself am a recovering alcoholic, and so I feel for the guy in those little places, and I kind of feel bad too, because the way he was written, I mean, the actor and the character, you gotta always try to kind of separate the two.
But they come through in parts.
Yeah, they do come through in parts. But the Xander character, I don't know if I read this somewhere or somebody told me somewhere, but it was like Joss Whedon, that was his kind of himself insert into the show.
I had read that somewhere as well years later.
And that's kind of whenever, I mean, I know some people don't mind self-inserting when you're creating something. I find it kind of like, if you're putting yourself into something that you're creating, I don't know, it seems weird to me. I mean, if I was creating a comic or if I was creating some project, I wouldn't put myself in it.
I don't think I would either.
I mean, it's just like, no, I don't know. I might use like name a character Kelly, just right. You know, for whatever reason, because it's my name and it's a pretty neat name and it kind of goes, you know what I'm saying? But I wouldn't create a character
that was
like, if you read this, you're like, God, that's really like Kelly. That's his personality and everything. That's, I just find that weird. And from the whole thing with Joss, you know,
that's a whole other,
right. We find out all these years later what a creep he kind of was, and so and just
the
not
Sarah the, and Michelle and mm. and all of them.
Yeah, he's wasn't the greatest, but he created this show, he created these characters, and I can give him that credit. But you know, I don't have to, you know, like the guy, right. and so forth. But yeah, that's. It was on my list, and I really and truthfully wanted to put Ripley. I really wanted to kind of keep with, you know.
Well, we kind of did the same thing. It was things that resonated with us. We didn't plan this, but we ended up choosing characters that really resonated with us while we were growing up or when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and we talked about this before, like, we did grow up with a little enough apart, like apart in age, that like yours, I think is really neat that yours are different than mine. I just know how strongly you feel about Buffy the show and how much you connected with it.
Yeah.
But I thought for sure, I was like, I bet you it's there somewhere.
Yeah. Danny and my friend Danny, who, I mean, Miranda knows Danny, when he was living in Dothan at the time, and of course we didn't have the WB here in Enterprise, Danny would come over every Friday and he would tape that episode, episode of Buffy. And before we would go to dinner, because Danny would show up here when I lived at my other house before I moved, he would show up about 4 o'clock. And so we would all get around the TV, pop the tape in and watch that episode of Buffy. And it was every Friday. And so
that was
our thing that we did. And I just fell in love with the show. I just, you know, I still do have several Buffy posters. I have the Rolling Stone cover that she did that was made into a poster. I found that in Montgomery. They had this kind of comic book thing going on at the Montgomery Mall, or one of the malls in Montgomery. And I saw it from when we walked in, when we walked into the food court and they had this guy had his little setup there. I saw it. I walked right up, but I picked it up, but I was like, how much is this? You know, and I bought it, and my friend Mark and Chris were like, are you serious? You're going to walk around? I was like, I'm going to walk around with this. This is mine. I'm
You
taking it.
used to have
Not,
it in the shop, didn't you?
yeah, I had it in the
Yeah.
shop. I have it. It's hanging up here in my living room. It's above my dad's antique radio that doesn't work. I have it up there, and I just loved the whole idea. You know, I always hated vampire characters in general, and so vampire hunters were my, you know, when I watched a vampire movie, any of the Hammer films back in the day, if they had a vampire hunted, I was like, go, dude. Stake the vampire,
See, and I was the
and
opposite. I usually loved the vampires and loved the vampire movies. So for some reason, her though, it was a different type of vampire. These were like, you didn't want to like these vampires, and you wanted to see her succeed and just be a normal teenager. Like,
Except for like Spike and Angel. I
he
mean,
grew on you. Spike grows
those,
on you. Spike
yeah,
grows on you.
and even like Angel, when Angel had his spinoff,
Oh, I loved the Angel
I kind of
spinoff.
scoffed at it because I was like, I really didn't care much for the Angel character. But once he got his own show and I started watching it, I was like, okay, this is not what I expected. And of course, they brought over Cordelia, and I think he had the first season, he had this one character. I can't remember his. I think the actor ended up dying, or something happened to him, and they had some other characters come in. But the 5 seasons his show was on was phenomenal,
And
and
they lined them up really well too, where we got a lot of crossover that was fantastic.
they did. They did some good crossover work. Well,
And
I
again,
just
the talent on there too was.
the late 90s and the early 2000s was, you know, really good time for TV, and
And WB knew what they were doing in that time. Like they were.
the other honorable mention I have is Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager. Now I know, you know, they're Trek fans. We have our opinions on everything, and some people don't like the Voyager series. Some people do. I'm on the side that I liked it. Where I like most, let me just say, I like most Star Trek series. There's going to be good and bad episodes in every series.
Of course.
I think the only one, like DS9, really did. I mean, they had some bad episodes, but probably not as many as other shows. DS9 really was kind of consistent, I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
But Voyager. There was just something about, and I know what it is. There was something about Kate Mulgrew
Yes.
that to me, she's. I remember seeing her back in the day, another 70s show that she played Kate Columbo. She played Columbo's wife, which Columbo was this detective TV show in the 70s, and she played. They did a spinoff with her. And I remember seeing that as a kid, but you know, then seeing her as Captain Janeway, it was really kind of, it was just cool. I mean, the first female captain, which was you know, a far, you know, we saw female captains in Next Gen, but they were always like, you know, guest characters, or are they, you know, there were, we never saw them in the captain's chair. There was like, oh, this is Captain so and so of the DeSoto or whatever. And but here we are, we have a show helmed by a female captain, and I just was like, okay, I'm ready for this. And it's, you know, they're going to be lost out in some other part of space, and they're going to be going back, and it was really, really cool. The thing that really attached me, I think, with Kate Mulgrew was the fact that she looked somewhat like my mom, and my mom had passed away in 99, and I don't have what time, what I want to say. I can't remember when Voyager started. I was one of the premier shows on the UPN network, and there was just something about her that reminded me of my mom. I mean, like I said, they share a similar look. And so I think in a lot of ways, I was still dealing with my mom's passing. And so the show became very comforting. In fact, it's, you know, we've talked about this before, not on podcasts, but we've talked mm-hmm. about comfort shows that we watch mm-hmm. when we're feeling, you know, sad or we're maybe our anxiety is really bad or whatever. Star Trek shows, I will just put on and listen to.
Yep.
Mainly like Voyager. Voyager, I will put on and just let it run. And I may, you know, if I'm having a real anxious day or if I'm in a really bad place, mind space, I will just click it on. Sometimes I'll sit down and watch. Other times I may just try to be productive and just have it running in the background and I'm cleaning or doing something, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very helpful. So, but yeah, she's one of my my honorable mentions, I guess. Her and Buffy. And I'll just go ahead and throw this last one in there. And surprisingly, I really wanted to have this on my main list, but Carrie Fisher playing Princess Leia.
Yeah.
That's that's all I got to say. I mean, because people were going to understand Princess Leia, you know, very, very strong, very, you know, I can't say well written from Star Wars, but as the show or as the movies and the legacy kind of spread out, she got very well defined as a character. So.
And those are both two that I really like went back and forth on giving them an honorable mention or even listing them. But I felt like they were an understood.
Yeah.
Like we understand that those mm-hmm. for sure are, are from at least for people between, you know, our ages, those are definite givens.
Yeah.
Two of mine are more very much, I'd say, a millennial given. They're just honorable mentions. And my first one is Veronica Mars from Veronica Mars, mm-hmm. Which was played by, my brain just went dead. Kristen Bell, played by Kristen Bell.
Yes.
Which is kind of, to me, if you think about it, it's modern day Jessica Fletcher, but in high school.
All right. I never knew what the show, I heard of the show, mm-hmm. but I never knew what the show was about. So,
it's kind of a high school, teen drama, mystery, neo-noir, sort of deal. Her father is a private detective. And so obviously she's picked up and learned from him and figured things out. And she moonlights herself as a private investigator under her dad's teaching, basically. And she solves, like, different standalone cases while working. Like, they're working to solve, you know how kind of like in CSI, each episode is a case, but there's usually, during the season, there's one bigger, complex thing they're trying to deal with. Well, that's what she did. The first two seasons had, like, this very long mystery kind of arc. The third one took like a different format, kind of, it was like smaller mystery arcs that would last like a couple of episodes instead of it being finalized within the episode. If I remember correctly, initially it was like a young adult novel, which had a male protagonist. Then when Rob Thomas turned this into a television show, he thought that a more noir piece told from a female point of view, because she's also like the narrator. Like, yes, she's the main character, but there's parts where she narrates the show. Mm-hmm. It was also a WB show, I believe.
Yeah, it was.
and it ran for 4 seasons. It started in 2005. So I was like already out of high school at this point, but I was still in that age range where it very much was interesting to me. And then they brought it back for like a limited series in 2019, and they had a film in 2014, and it was done very well. I thought it was really good. Unfortunately, there are some like major trigger warnings that happen later on. But it was a fantastic show that dealt with a lot of issues that she would have dealt with. As the difference is, while Buffy was all supernatural and she was kicking butt and taking names, Kristen Bell's character as Veronica was doing the same thing, but like in the real world, like she's photographing people cheating and she's like getting to the bottom of like things going bad at school. And so it's kind of a cross. She's kind of Jessica Fletcher and Buffy combined.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely felt like for me, cause I had a really deep connection to that character. I really, really loved that one. My other honorable mention would be Betty Suarez, played by America Ferrera in Ugly Betty. That one I think was actually like an ABC drama, but it was very good. Betty is, she, in the end, she really isn't ugly, but like she's just different. She's part of the Latin community, and she's got a sister who is like drop dead gorgeous. They've lost their mother. Their dad is trying his hardest, and she gets a big time job at like a fashion magazine. And it's like all of the stuff that goes along with that. And then her learning like who she is. And not only who she is, and there's a lot that happens in the show that's just flat out like drama, soap opera kind of stuff that's just entertaining. But at the core of it, Betty is learning who she is, what she will and will not put up with, what she is willing to compromise and what she's not. Her ultimate goal when you first meet her is she wants to become a magazine publisher. She wants journalistic credits. She doesn't want to just be the girl that like gets coffee. And I think also this is that time period in TV where they were doing things where like geeky, like I think Freaks and Geeks may have been out and or maybe just ended, but she was very geeky.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. And I watching her grow amongst the seasons and like just becoming an actual, because she's an adult, and watching her struggle with like how people are treated based on their looks. And she's like, you know what? No. I always found her like extremely powerful and relatable. So I definitely felt like she deserved an honorable mention.
Yeah. I remember hearing about the show. I really didn't know a whole lot about it. It's kind of like the Veronica Mars situation. I knew of the show and knew that it had a following. It had an impact. So,
well, it's kind of like it's a comedy drama, romantic comedy kind of sort
of.
So I could see where you'd be like, I might not be interested, but I enjoyed it. And they even say it kind of was particularly geared towards like women in age 18 to 49. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know why I thought this, but when I first heard of Veronica Mars, I thought, that's such a weird name. For some reason, I thought like they were trying to spin off like another kind of supernatural TV show like Buffy. My attention span was like, there are a few shows I'm watching and that's it. I'm not adding anything to the list.
Well, at the time we couldn't unless we had a Danny.
Yeah.
You really had to pick and choose.
We like until I think it was maybe the third or fourth season before we actually got the WB on our cable package. Yeah. You know, we finally got it, but it was like I said, either the second or third, maybe
more. Well,
but
I remember. So I had WB growing up, but I lived so close to Nashville that we had WB out of Nashville. But I remember when I first moved to Alabama and we had, I want to say it was Dish Network at the time. I actually had to call and pay extra to add like a WB to my package, and I don't believe it was even Dothan. I want to say it was like Atlanta or something, or Montgomery, Atlanta, like a much bigger city, even though Dothan's pretty big. But I remember having to actively pay. I want to say it was like $5 extra a month, which sounds crazy. But I listen, if you have been listening to me podcast for a long time, you already know, like, WB, CW, because it was WB, but now it's CW. Before that, I think it was UPN. But they kind of, like, grab my attention, and I am pretty much a connoisseur of all their things, because that ends up being, like, the home of Supernatural, the home of Vampire Diaries, all of the shows that you and I really got into, Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow. Like, but I had to pay. it was crazy.
I think, like, this was back when I actually went and paid all my bills with a check.
Oh, yeah.
Was, like, again, this is back, you know, in the early 2000s or what have you, late 90s. And I remember going to the, because I had a friend that worked at the cable office that I got, or that we all got cable from, because we only had one cable provider. You know, there was no other.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of had the monopoly on it. And I remember from time to time going, hey, do you know, like, are y'all going to be getting the WB on, you know, any of your. And I know, like, I'd asked a few times, and eventually I think I kind of just, and then I went in one day and she's like, hey, guess what we're getting? And I said, the WB. And she's like, yes. And I was like super stoked. I was super excited. And I was like, finally, I don't have to, you know, poor Danny doesn't have to be like, you know, bootlegging Buffy to us every week, which he didn't mind doing, because, like I said, he was coming over anyway. So he didn't mind doing it. But,
I mean,
but it, you know, that's those characters are, you know, kind of the. When I was thinking up my list, and like the way you thought up your list, it was from a certain perspective. Like I said, there were a lot of characters that, you know, if like two characters that come to mind, like from Farscape or from Battlestar Galactica, you have Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica, you have like Aaron's son from Farscape. These very staunch, powerful female, you know, characters that you know are written well and are you know, like one of my friends that you remember Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember I was like Battlestar, the revamp, I can't think of the guy's name, Ronald something, that relaunched Battlestar. And Ronald Moore.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Katie Sackhoff played, Starbuck. I had just a huge crush on her, and I remember I was playing one of the episodes that I could play that wasn't, you know, too violent or whatever at the shop, and I remember Doug was sitting there watching it, and I was like, man, Starbuck is so just, she is, you know, she's it. And he looked at me and she goes, she looks like a man.
Well, I will say, Jerry and I had this conversation about Katie Sackhoff the other night, and he didn't say she looked like a man, but he's like, you know, she's just one of those actresses that sometimes you look at her in certain roles or like in interviews and stuff, and she's just this gorgeous woman. Mm-hmm. And then other times you're like, what in the world?
Yeah. See, that's, I kind of understand that, I guess. I mean, I've always thought, And this is, again, the reason behind me crushing on Katie Sackhoff is that she looks extremely, she shares a very strong resemblance to one of my childhood crushes that was very tomboyish, was very, you know, we were best pals in the neighborhood and we were around the same age. She looks a lot like her. And I think that's what I, you know, have kind of crushed on that. But
yeah,
he said he was just like every time. And after he saw my reaction, like, no, she's not, you know, she's not mannish.
He's like, oh,
yeah. And so he, every time he was like, oh, so we're watching, Starbuck, the mannish, you know, whatever, he would make some silly comment.
Yeah.
And we would, you know, argue or whatever. It was just banter. But again, you'd have these characters were really, I mean, were very empowered and not, you got to see over the course of all the seasons, just what kind of made Starbuck, you know, or Kara Thrice, I think was her real name. Starbuck is like her call sign, but
okay, I don't remember right now.
You got to see her growth. And that's another thing too, is when you have a character that has growth and you could see the kind of trials by fire that they mm-hmm. go through and to kind of become the character that everyone kind of loves and cares about.
There's actually been studies done. I'm glad you brought that up, like kind of like bring us home here. I think it's fascinating as we all make our lists. So me and you making our list or someone else listening to us is like, I'm going to make my list. They've done some studies to prove that I'll give a prime example. You look at Benedict Cumberbatch at the beginning of Sherlock, right? He's this floppy hair, super pasty. Like, everyone's like, how did you ever find that attractive? And I think it has something to do with this study, this article that I wrote or read. I did not write it, but I read it in regards to, like, as you watch a show and how your brain starts melding around that person's idiosyncrasies, and even though they're a character and your brain knows they're not a real person, they're like the way they look, you start finding more and more attractive, and other people, kind of like, you know, Doug did with Katie Sackhoff, are like,
yeah,
what is wrong? Even Bianca's like, really, Cumberbatch, you liked him then? I liked him then. And it's something to do with your brain starts developing like a full, you see them for their full self.
Yeah,
essentially,
yeah,
is what it is. And like, you actually grow to love this person and their look and their character. You know, and that I, Katie Sackhoff for you, Cumberbatch for me, prime example. And listen, Cumberbatch now does not look like Cumberbatch then either. So there's that.
Yeah.
But I think it's fascinating that when you're creating these lists, a lot of it has to do with these are characters that we watched for so many seasons, and maybe the first season we watched them, we already felt that pull, that like they're a phenomenal lead, they're a phenomenal female character. But it's like the more we watched them, the more they resonated with us, or the more we saw them as this like strong lead. And I do think it has something to do with that article and the psyche. And even though they're a fictional character, you start seeing them as a whole, flaws and not. So
yeah, yeah.
It's very interesting. There's quite a few lists out on the internet as well. I pulled up several just to kind of see where our stuff would rank. And most all of the ones that you and I mentioned were either on like a really big list or even on smaller ones. There's some that only had like 10 people or 25 people, and there's some that have like a lot of modern day, and I didn't listen. There's a lot of great modern day ones, but
yeah. I thought about that too when I was kind of working through my list, and I was like, mm-hmm. if I don't kind of stick with a, you know, like a, I need to stick with some sort of pattern,
plan
to kind of go with. I don't want it to kind of feel like I'm just going all over the map. So that's kind of the way I went with it. But yeah, there is tons there. There's no right or wrong list. I think it's really up to how and what you feel, And it's more if it's a personal connection you have to a female character that resonates with you. And so, and when I was thinking about it in those terms, I said, well, you know, I should start where it kind of started. And that's back in the 70s and back in Saturday morning cartoons. And kind of once I started down that path, it kind of just led to the next, you know, oh, well, this leads right into this and this leads right into this. So, yeah.
There's this huge list on Ranker that just keeps going and going and going.
I can imagine.
And you can actually vote. And so I guess from time to time, depending on how people vote, like people may shift up and down. But this is the greatest female characters in film history. And they do have multiples on there. They had, I think all of the ones we mentioned today are on there. I noticed that both Lisa and Marge were on there, which as a mother now, absolutely Marge should have an honorable mention. I should shout that out.
100%. Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
But,
I agree.
It's a fascinating list. And there were some that I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. Oh, I didn't think about that. But it's kind of interesting to see that this list just keeps scrolling and it's all female. So I really enjoyed our topic today.
I have too. I think that for me, hearing your list and seeing your point of view and kind of getting, you know, like a lot of the ones that you mentioned, I never had really thought of or would have would have chosen. Not that you know, I would have, you know, it's not you know what I'm saying. I'm definitely not. There's
a different, you know, connection.
Right. Because like I think the one that stood out to me the most when you were saying was Lisa. I was like, wow, yeah, I was thinking to myself, God, that's such a really good one. And I would have never thought of that. Again, I mean, I've watched The Simpsons. I know who Lisa is. I know that she's a very, like you've described, a very strong-willed, opinionated, smart, you know, well-written female character. So that's when I was really like, yeah, that's awesome. You know, my first one being Isis. I mean, this actress, I don't know really how much else she did. I know that she passed away some time ago, but I just kind of wanted to use her because I don't feel like, I mean, if somebody's listening to this and they decide to look it up and maybe they decide to maybe catch or look up YouTube videos with Isis or whatever, it kind of honors that actress and that person that probably didn't get a whole lot of notoriety.
Right.
And not that me talking about her is going to get her up tons. I'm just saying I kind of wanted to just put that out into the universe and just say, hey, somebody remembers you playing this character and what it meant to them as a young kid. And thankful that I saw these characters because that's like I was talking about. I really never understood. I mean, I understand misogyny now. I understand what it is, how bad it is. But as a kid, it didn't click with me. It didn't click with me. I'm like,
understand it.
I was like, girls can do everything, guys. You know, I never saw the, because another thing too, is like reading comics. You saw a lot of female characters in comics doing things. And, you know, I think that maybe, I'm not saying that comic book readers are I don't know, for me it helped me to be a better person when it comes to judging or seeing what people are capable of, that everybody's capable of doing whatever, you know. It's not just a gender situation. And I think the era that I was raised in, you did have a lot of, like, you know, girls can't play baseball and this, that, you know, there was a lot of misogyny in the 70s. My dad wasn't like that. My dad didn't, you know, he didn't have any chauvinistic Or if he did, he never said it around me and my mom. I mean,
but I think that's what's important is he probably did not, because most people say things in the comfort of their home, and he, you know, it's like we talked about before how kids say things and you're like, well, where did they learn that?
Yeah.
You can't give all the blame to a parent. Thank God. No, my kid says some things and I'm like, what is wrong with you? I did not.
Yeah.
But yeah. I feel strongly, even though I never got the opportunity to meet your father, like knowing you, knowing your siblings, I feel strongly that you were probably right about him and that he was not.
I don't think he was. I mean, my parents were, by the time I came along, both my siblings, my older sister and my brother were out of the house. I was raised essentially as an only child. They were kind of hands off by the time I came along. They had already raised two kids.
They were tired.
they were tired. And I was not a problem child at all. Mainly, I mean, just because I was, you know, an introvert kid that was on the spectrum to some degree. I'm 100%. I know I had to be on the spectrum somewhere. Undiagnosed, because there was no autism back then. There was probably no ADHD back then either. You know, it was like hyperactivity. You know, you need to give them something to calm them down.
Yeah, you need to give them I forget what they used to say about my family members, but it was like, oh, just send them outside, sign them up for sports.
Yeah.
Give them chores. Like, because even when I was growing up, like, girls didn't get ADHD. Like, it was a thing. Like, girls didn't have ADHD.
They did.
Clearly, folks, we know that there was autism and there was ADHD. We're saying
in the medical world, people
weren't talking about it.
They weren't talking about it. There weren't any of those studies that may have, they hadn't got over to the, at least they hadn't got down to the South. And so, you know, yeah, I was
living
super,
in a whole different world down here.
But, you know, that was just my parents were really good when they came. I think when they raised me, they just kind of taught me the golden rule of, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And yeah, there was a lot of religion in my family growing up, Southern Baptist. Mm-hmm, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But, you know, I mainly am the person I am today because of the way that they kind of taught me to just treat people, you know, and that's the biggest thing I got from them. Cause I remember as a kid, I had a hard time making friends cause I was just really nervous and anxious and really wanted to have friends, but I didn't really know how to, and I was kind of a jerk sometimes. And so, you know, one of the things my mom told me was like that, what I just said, you know, if you want to be a friend, you have to be a good friend, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want friends, you have to treat them, you know, like you'd want to be treated. And, you know, I got that. I understood that. And kind of once I started kind of applying that, yeah, I started making friends and started, you know, kind of learning to socialize with other people, learning to share, learning to, you know, all those things that kids learn. But like, I think I'm was pretty lucky to have the parents I had, because they really weren't. And again, I can't, you know, they weren't racist as far as I know. They never dropped any N-bombs around me. And so I can say under most certainty that they weren't racist. They never taught me to be racist, and they weren't, my dad wasn't misogynistic. You know, like I said, my parents were, even though there were, you know, my dad wasn't as religious. My mom was. I guess they were kind of progressive in the way that they raised me. They weren't, you know.
They wanted a good human, and they didn't care.
They were tired, I think, and they were like, look, here's what you got to do. And like, if I had a problem, if I had something going on, I could go talk to them. I could go.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can remember, like, by age 11, my dad had bought He'd always wanted to have like a little townhouse or a beach house because my sister and her husband had a beach house. And so they like going down there. So my parents found, my dad found a good deal on a townhouse. And so he bought it. And him and mom would go down every weekend to the beach and leave me at home.
And of course, I'm sure they were like, do you want to go? And you were like, no.
No. Well,
I know you.
They knew better, but like mom would be like, okay, well, I'm leaving you $20. I'm going to order pizza for you and the guys. Cause she knew all the guys were going to come over. We were going to play D&D all night and game. So they weren't worried about.
She knew where you were without question.
She knew where I was without question. My sister was in town. The neighbors, I mean, we could do, you know, as long as we weren't outside making noise and waking up people, my neighbors weren't going to complain. And if there was an issue, I could run next door, you know. But you think about it today, no one's going to leave their kid at age 11 for three days.
In some states, it's actually illegal. Folks, don't do that.
Don't do that.
My child will turn 18 in a few months, and we're having a discussion of if I am comfortable enough to leave him overnight to stay somewhere that's only an hour and a half away. So the same distance that your parents were away when you were 11, and I'm over here like, oh.
Yeah, it's – the 70s were kind of crazy, I think, in a lot of ways.
Our parents were just like, whatever, just – And then in the 90s, they came back and they were like, we were kidding. We don't want ever anymore. No.
Well, yeah. I mean, you start thinking about, you know, just safety issues. And even today, right. You definitely don't want to mess with that. But, well, it's been awesome getting a chance to hang out and talk with you and get to hang out and talk about things that we both are passionate and that we care about. So, thank you for us having this time. I mean, I appreciate, getting to do this with you. So it was nice to get a chance to do the podcast.
Absolutely. I want to encourage everyone, if you have not listened to any other shows on Place to Be Nation, Pop Experience, or even over on the wrestling feed, the North-South Connection, please check everything out. We also have a Facebook group called Place to Be, where everyone kind of comes and discusses things together. Sometimes we have like food tournaments, like the best breakfast food, and that gets interesting when a section of our group is from England. Sometimes these are entertaining because they're like, breakfast burritos? Who would have breakfast burritos and tacos? And all the Americans are like, yo, don't knock it till you try it. But we have a lot of fun over there. And then, like Kelly and I said, we're going to try to be a little bit more consistent. We have a pattern with a lot of the things we discuss. It's things that like we are passionate about, usually has some connection to our childhood. And our next episode's plan is not only our childhood, but our adulthood. And one of the fandoms that actually had us, we were like, wait, you know you? Kind of thing. So we will be discussing the world of Doctor Who, how we got into it, maybe our favorite companion, favorite doctor, favorite... Ugh. I don't know. Bad guy is not the right word, because there's so many creatures on there. They're not bad. They're misunderstood. Hopefully come back next month and listen to us talk about Doctor Who. But until then, thank you for listening, and we are so glad you're here.